and its call for a nuclear strategy of flexible response had greatly impressed Kennedy. He agreed with Taylor's central thesis. In a crisis, the president should have a wide range of military options. Kennedy wanted the ability to fight limited wars, conventional wars, and a nuclear war with the Soviets that could be stopped short of mutual annihilation. Controlled response and controlled escalation and pauses for negotiation became buzzwords in the Kennedy administration. If the American military had the means to prevail in a variety of different ways, with or without nuclear weapons, the United States could resist Soviet influence throughout the world. The record of the Romans made clear, Kennedy later told his national security staff, that their success was dependent on their will and ability to fight successfully at the edges of their empire. Despite the harsh personal attacks during the presidential campaign, Eisenhower helped the new administration with its reappraisal of nuclear strategy. His science advisor's memo on the shortcomings of the single integrated operational plan was forwarded to McNamara and Kennedy. The memo supported many of the arguments against the PSYOP made by General Taylor and leading officers in the Navy. The chief of naval operations, Admiral Arleigh Burke, warned that such a large, undiscriminating attack on the Soviet Union would deposit lethal fallout not only on American allies like South Korea and Japan, but also on the U.S. Navy's Pacific Fleet. A reappraisal of the nation's entire military stance now seemed urgent, and President Kennedy asked McNamara to lead it, to raise fundamental questions about how weapons were procured, what purpose they served, and whether they were even necessary. Although a year older than the president, McNamara, at 44, was the youngest person thus far to head the Department of Defense, and he recruited a group of cocky and iconoclastic young men to join the administration, academics from Harvard and MIT, RAND analysts, economists, Rhodes scholars. Henry Rowan, a graduate of Harvard and Oxford who soon played a large role in nuclear planning, was 36. Harold Brown, chosen to guide Pentagon research on new weapon systems and technology, was 33. Alain Enthoven, an economist who rigorously applied cost-benefit analysis to the defense budget, was 30. Later depicted as whiz kids, defense intellectuals, the best and the brightest, McNamara's team was determined to transform America's nuclear strategy and defense spending. 3 days after the Goldsboro accident, McNamara met with members of the Pentagon's Weapons Systems Evaluation Group, WSEG. It had recently completed a study, WSEG Report No. 50, that described the Soviet forces the United States would most likely face by the mid-1960s and compared the merits of different tactics to oppose them. Eisenhower's Secretary of Defense, Thomas B. Gates, had seen the report a few months earlier and thought McNamara should know about it. McNamara's briefing on WSEG Report No. 50, scheduled to last a few hours, wound up occupying a full day. The authors of the report had measured the economic efficiency of various American weapons systems, explaining, for example, that the annual operating costs of keeping a B-52 bomber on ground alert was about 9 times larger than the annual maintenance costs of a Minuteman missile. That was just the sort of data that Robert McNamara craved. But the authors of WSEG R50 had also reached a conclusion that nobody in the Kennedy administration wanted to hear. America's command and control system was so complex, outdated, and unreliable that a controlled or flexible response to a Soviet attack would be impossible. In fact, the President of the United States might not be able to make any response. He would probably be killed during the first moments of a nuclear war. By launching a surprise attack on 5 targets, the White House, the Pentagon, Camp David, Site R, and High Point, the Soviet Union had a good chance of wiping out the civilian leadership of the United States. None of the bunkers at those locations would survive the blast from a multi-megaton weapon. And 2 of the emergency command posts, Site R and High Point, weren't regularly staffed with high-ranking officers. By hitting 9 additional targets, the Soviet Union could eliminate America's military leadership. The destruction of America's command and control system could be achieved with a 90% chance of success through the use of only 35 Soviet missiles. 4 would be aimed at the White House and 5 at Camp David to ensure that the president was killed. Under surprise attack conditions, there can be little confidence, the report concluded, that the presidential decision would be made and military execution orders be received by the combat elements of the strategic nuclear forces before the high command is disrupted. Moreover, the command bunkers built during the Eisenhower years lacked the communications equipment that would allow the controlled escalation of a nuclear war or pauses for negotiation with the Soviets, even if the president survived the initial attack. The high-frequency radio system used to communicate with SAC's bombers and the very low-frequency system used to contact the Navy's Polaris submarines relied on a handful of terminals that could easily be destroyed. According to one classified account, the Eisenhower administration had installed a one-shot command, control, and communication system. It hadn't been designed to fight a limited or prolonged nuclear war. The PSYOP required only that a go code be transmitted, and after that, nothing needed to be said, because nothing could be done to change or halt the execution of the war plan. The underground command posts were little more than hideouts, where military and civilian leaders could ride out a nuclear attack and then emerge, perhaps, to rebuild the United States. America's early warning systems were also woefully inadequate. The Dew line of radar stations stretching across the Arctic, the Sage direction centers, the mighty Whirlwind II computers, built with great urgency at enormous expense, had been designed to track Soviet bombers. They could not detect Soviet missiles. The ballistic missile early warning system, created for that task, was just becoming operational. At best, the BMUs could spot missiles launched from the Soviet Union roughly 15 minutes before they hit the United States. But if the missiles were launched from Soviet submarines off the coast, the warning time would be zero. The BMUs couldn't detect missiles approaching at such a low altitude. And the reliability of the system, McNamara learned, still left much to be desired. During a tour of NORAD headquarters in Colorado Springs, Colorado, a few months earlier, Peter G. Peterson, the executive vice president of the